Yo, have you ever thought about starting your own podcast? When I was trying to get this podcast off the ground, I had a lot of questions. How do I record an episode? How do I get my show onto all the apps that people like to listen to? How do you make money? The answer was pretty simple for me. I started using Anchor. Anchor is a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing your podcast. And best of all, it's 100% free and super easy to use. And now, Anchor can match you with great sponsors who want to advertise in your podcast. So that means you can get paid immediately, like right away. In fact, that's what I'm doing right now by reading you this ad. It's super simple. So if you always wanted to start a podcast, let's start now. Go to anchor.fm/start to join me and the diverse community of producers using Anchor. Again, that's anchor.fm/start. See you soon. What's up, everyone? And welcome back to the Stretch 4 podcast. I'm your host, Peter Tran, and on the line, I got my pick and pop partner calling out of Ottawa, Josh Cohen. How you doing?
What's happening?
Also calling out of Ottawa. I wouldn't say you're my pick and pop partner, but you know, you're there. A little like that mid-range game. Rajan Walia, how you feeling?
How about them Pacers?
Oh, that's a... I don't know, man.
I don't know. How about them Pacers?
I don't know how I feel about this thing. A little salty, yep. A little good.
Yeah, at least we're talking about them because I feel like they've been flying under the radar and maybe we're talking about them for the wrong reasons, but
and now they picked up. They're going to be under the radar the rest of the year.
Yeah, after that Raps game there, I can't see them doing any damage, which sucks. Let's start there. We're recording at 10 o'clock on Thursday morning right after the Raps Pacers game where the Pacers pulled off an incredible victory led by Thaddeus Young. Which is pretty odd, but not surprising because the Raptors have no rebounding. And Victor Oladipo is probably down for the year at this point with a serious knee injury is what the team's called it so far. We're obviously awaiting MRI results from today, but it's not looking good for this team right now.
Yeah, like without him, their team is pretty much a mid to lower tier team in the East. Obviously, it seems like it's going to be an injury that he's going to be out for at least months. And at this point of the season, you're really expected to like kind of grab a stronghold of a playoff position. I wouldn't even be surprised if they end up like on the bubble, like seed 7, 8, 9, maybe. And at the end of the day, it kind of is a damn shame because Depot's been having a great year. Believe he was most improved player last year. And this year he's been doing great as well and carrying an Indiana team that has been flying under the radar. And I really thought could have pushed, the Raps or Boston in a playoff series. I know, we have a difference of opinion, Josh, but, hey, you know what? I think they have some strengths where the Raps have a lot of weaknesses. So, I think it could have been a great series. Damn shame. There's one less team in the East that's a potential, Eastern Conference finalists, so it's really down to three now.
Yeah, that's the most disappointing part for me as a viewer, in that we only have four East teams now that can really go to the conference finals, even though Indiana was probably the fifth team out of those teams because they're not as talented as the other four. Now, like you said, they're probably going to be a lower-seeded playoff team who every single top seed is going to want to play now. Because they're going to have real troubles of scoring the basketball in the next few months, obviously, with Darren Collison being their lead guard now. And Tyreke Evans, who has not had a good year so far, is going to have to fill in. And, you know, the big boys and Miles Turner and Sabonis and obviously Thaddeus Young from yesterday are going to have to step up and score a lot of points and replace Oladipo's production as best they can. But I think this really hurt their plans because I think they're really one player away, too. I think that they would have been in the market for a guy like Conley, and he could have really helped them, obviously. But I think they're just a point guard away from being better than teams like Philadelphia and maybe Boston.
Relax.
It's hard to say.
Relax.
We'll see how it comes together with Boston. But
even with a better point guard, I don't think they would have been better than Boston. Like their defense.
I think they're
so
close.
Strong.
I think they're closer than people think. I think we just don't see enough Indiana, and they're a team that kind of has a formula that isn't quite popular in the NBA like this year or maybe the last couple of years. But I think they prove that they know how to kind of grit and grind. And in the playoffs, you need to rebound well. You have to play defense, and you can't really rely on just one player. And they have, I would say, three or four offensive threats. None of them are like top tier LeBron, Kevin Durant talents, but they have players that can score. And I think they might be a team that might actually consider trading. Maybe not for a Connolly because he has such a big contract and you're committing a lot. But I know last week you guys talked about Dennis Smith Jr. That might be a team that might be interested in a player like him if the price is right.
Who on this team can score now? Other than Sabonis.
I mean, Turner's okay when he gets set up by, you know, on pick and pops and such and pick and rolls. But
he needs someone to set him up, right? Like, he's never going to create his own shot.
Bogdanovich has been really good this year, but he's more of a secondary type as well. So on the ball, I think it has to be Tyreke Evans going forward. And as we've talked about already, I mean, he has not had a good year so far, despite, you know, having a great year last year with Memphis. But he's been okay the last like 5 or 10 games. So maybe he'll step up into that role now.
That's very optimistic. Like,
yeah, they're going to be a bottom five scoring team going forward, and they're going to be really hard to watch. But they do have the league's best defense, even if Oladipo, you know, has been out. He's been out for like 10, 15 games already this year, and they maintain the top defense in the NBA. You know, it's going to be tough for them, obviously, to score the ball, but they'll stay in game. They'll stick around, and I think they'll be in that, you know, bottom three seeding with Eastern Conference.
Damn.
So they're still making the playoffs, right?
Yeah, I can see them as like a seventh seed. I think Brooklyn's going to pass them now, to be honest. I think that they're going to have a tough time winning games without Oladipo.
They're sitting bottom 10 in offensive efficiency right now already. Or in So they're not. It's going to be tough.
Yeah, but defense wins you ships, right? So
yeah, if you get to the playoffs, man. That's the issue, right? They're going to get to the first round, and they're going to have to go against, let's say, Toronto or Philly or Boston, and they're not going to know what to do, right?
Yeah,
but defense is only good if you have someone to score the ball a little bit, but if you only try to lock people down but you can't score, you're kind of boned.
But I agree. Like, I don't think they're going to create noise in the playoffs, but I think they're going to stick around in enough games in the regular season, and I fully expect them to make a trade. The reason being, like, if Oladipo's injury is as serious as they made it sound, he might be out for a long period. We're talking like maybe a year, like kind of like a DeMarcus Cousins, where you don't even know if he's going to come back the same player. And at that point, you can't really just hope and invest that he's going to come back the same player. And you got to look to the free agency market to maybe pick up someone for the future.
I think this changes their plans too. So, I mean, they're not going to be active at the trade deadline now because what's the point? They're not going to go anywhere. And they've got some decisions coming up too with Sabonis, not this year, but next year. And if they're going to extend him, which they probably should, but he hasn't really proven that he's able to play with Miles Turner yet. So both of those guys are really starting centers in the NBA, and I'm not sure if you want that much money tied up. They're probably going to have to pay him at least $60, $70 million. So they got a decision coming up, and maybe they end up trading Turner instead. I mean, he's on a decent contract for what he provides, and he's been really good this year too. So they got some decisions.
Is Turner locked up for a while?
Yeah, they re-signed him. He's going to make $18 million a year the next 4 years.
Okay. Oh yeah. So he's tied up for like 3 or 4 years now, right?
Yeah, at least four. I think it's 4 or 5. I think it's a 4-year extension.
That wouldn't be a bad contract to trade, actually. You can get really good value for that much. That's a really good value contract
for a guy. Yeah, I mean, for what he's provided, a lot of people think he's in the conversation for Defensive Player of the Year, and they have the first-ranked defense, and he's an amazing shot blocker. So he's definitely an asset at this point.
Yeah. Yo, the Pacers are still paying Monte Ellis. That's all I got. I think I've already said this
good
before,
for Monte, man. Get that back.
Yeah. For the next, until 2022. No wonder he doesn't need to play.
Going back to the standings, though, it looks like Indiana can only drop to sixth because the teams behind Brooklyn are Charlotte and Miami, and they're just floundering anyway. And Brooklyn's 7 games behind, but I think they can probably make that up if Indiana continues to struggle without Oladipo.
To be fair, they haven't really struggled there. They just won yesterday against Toronto.
No, they did, but, you know, without him, they were around, like, a 500 team, and they were playing some pretty bad teams during that stretch. So they're going to have a tough time going forward.
Yeah. Man, the bottom of the East is terrible. So the 6-8 seeds are Brooklyn, Charlotte, and Miami right now, with Detroit and Washington just looming, trying to get in. This is an awful bottom of the conference.
And all those teams should be looking to blow it up, like the very bottom of the Eastern Conference. Those teams, Atlanta, Chicago, New York, Cleveland. Just blow it up. Detroit, Washington, and Orlando. It's over.
Well, Detroit did try to blow it up, and then they got Blake instead.
Blake's been great this year, though. It's not his fault.
No, but he's tied up so much money, man. It's also thanks to Stan Van Gundy for giving Reggie Jackson so much damn money. Come on. I'm salty, but it's irrelevant. You know who the...
And John.
What?
Lure. And John Lure.
Hey, relax. John Lure is at least a productive player.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
I wouldn't say he's very productive, but he's somewhat productive.
Yeah, he's great at handing out water on the bench.
Hey, sometimes you just need a good morale guy, okay? Come on.
Great locker room.
Exactly. You know who's got a mess-up locker room? Literally a locker room that's on fire. The Memphis Grizzlies. So, can you believe this story? Like, how the hell does that locker room just set on fire?
I think somebody tried charging their phone inside a sauna. It didn't really work out too well.
I can't tell if you're serious, but...
nothing would surprise me. Trade updates.
So... Earlier this week, we heard the Rhodes report that Memphis is finally fielding offers for Conley and Gasol after they had a meeting with the owner last week. So Memphis might finally be blowing it up. And it's about damn time. They're second last in the West right now, having lost their last 7, 1 out of 9 out of the last 10. I think they're like 3 out of their last 23 or something stupid like that. Like, they have just been awful since the beginning of the year.
Yeah, they just cannot score. But going back to Conley and Gasol, Conley has 3 years left, including this year, with no team option. He's got 32 coming next year and 34 coming the year after. And then Gasol is on a more reasonable contract. He's got 2 years left. He has a player option, which nobody really knows if he's going to choose to take. But I think that there's more of a market out there for a starting point guard like Conley than there is a starting big man like Gasol right now, just based on the team situations right now. So the only teams I can really see be interested in Gasol are like teams like Charlotte, Dallas, San Antonio, Sacramento, maybe even Toronto, and even Detroit. I think that, maybe getting off Andre Drummond's contract might be an option for them, because I'm not a fan of Andre Drummond. I don't really know what he does really well besides rebounding.
You named off Detroit and Dallas. Two teams who have, like, bona fide big guys.
And paid them as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, but Jordan's only there for the 1 year, right? And they can just get off his contract that way in case Gasol decides to exercise his option. And then with, Detroit, at least Memphis will get back a guy who's talented and young, even though he doesn't really play wing basketball. But,
it's like some time for him. Yeah. I'm sure they'll love that in grit and grind.
Grit and grind is over anyway. It's time to move on.
To what, though? This team has no personality. To
rebuilding. rebuild last year. They were 1 year too late with doing this.
Yeah, it's because they shut everyone down last year, right? Conley and Gasol were sat at, like, December last year onwards, so there was no way that they could actually rebuild.
And it's hard to trade injured players, and they also were on big contracts, and they wanted to see how the team developed, and they had first good 20 games. They were leading the Western Conference, and I think they just, inverted the conference standings, and now they're probably going to be a team that's hoping to be the last battling it out with Phoenix. But I think Connolly does have more value. Also, he's a younger player, and he's shown to have actually all-star caliber stats, and I think a team that might be potentially interested in him would be like a team like Dallas, actually, because they're looking to find another guard to play with Luka, and I think Connolly offers a good all-around game, and I think they have assets that they could trade back to Memphis for the future, and also just even for the short term as well.
Yeah, Dallas is pretty much the only team that can trade for both Conley and Gasol at the same time, too, because they can include, Dennis Smith Jr., Wes Matthews' contract, Harrison Barnes, and Jordan, and they'd be able to match salary. But I don't know if that's the direction they want to go in, obviously, but I agree with you that Conley would be a great fit there as a secondary ball handler and a guy that just provides leadership and would fit well with Luka. like Dallas is a team that doesn't have their draft pick this year, so they should be looking to try to win games and hopefully make the playoffs, but they're pretty far out of it right now. But I mean, if they make a trade for Conley, you never know.
What also, what about Orlando as well, as talking about teams without maybe a ball handler for the future? I think they could use a point guard, any point guard as a matter of fact, but I just don't know what they could offer in return for Connolly. And if they want to take that contract, considering it is kind of an investment for the next 2 years.
Yeah, I mean, if they want to invest in perpetual treadmill status, then I think that'd be a great move for them.
I think they just want the playoffs, let's be fair.
Which is treadmill status, right? Being like a bottom three seed in the East and a playoff picture every year. I mean,
I would, if I were Orlando, I would.
I'm not a fan of that.
Are you serious?
How can they? They need to rebuild the right way, and you know they've been making draft picks that they look decent. I mean, like Bamba and Jonathan Isaac look like players maybe 2 or 3 years from now, but I don't think they should try to advance and try to, you know, get Mike Conley in a situation where their team's not really ready yet.
Oh, man, I fully disagree. They've been trying to rebuild for the past, like, 8 years, and it's been unsuccessful. I think it's time pretty much to just go after anyone they can get.
Yeah, they've been looking to rebuild after Dwight left. That's been like their golden era. And I think I kind of agree with Peter. Like, some franchises understand that there can be only two teams that make the finals every year. And to be competitive for the next 3-4 years is good for the franchise. It's good for sales. It's good for merchandise. It's
get that playoff rev, man.
Exactly. And I think they're a team that hasn't made the playoffs in a while, or been made the second round at least of the playoffs in at least, I believe, last 3-4 years.
So we've already hated on Detroit for doing this type of move, but now you want Orlando to do it and lock themselves into Mike Conley and Vucevic being the two best players the next 3 years? I'm not a fan of that.
But I think only so many teams can rebuild. Like, if eight teams in each conference are looking, or not eight, but like five or six teams are looking to rebuild, there's probably a likelihood that only like 3 or 4 end up making the playoffs, and that you might be one of those two sucker teams that rebuilds and fails and i.e. becomes the Philadelphia Sixers for like 8 years.
I understand that, but at the same time, Orlando hasn't really tried to rebuild the right way. They gave Serge Ibaka a bunch of money. They gave Bismack Biyombo 5 years, $80 million. Like, they've been trying to win the last 5 years despite being in a rebuilding mode. So they just need to just tear it down and just let Vucevic go, build around the young guys, and even trade Gordon for some draft picks and just try to just bottom out. That's my opinion.
We'll see. But do you guys think at the end of the day, in a couple of weeks, do you think Gasol and Connolly are going to be on the Grizz roster?
I think that Connolly is going to get traded. And I think that Gasol is going to end up staying and being miserable the rest of the year. And then he's going to decline his player option and become a free agent this offseason.
Decline the player option. $25 million.
He's going to get a decent amount on the market anyway. I think he's going to be looking for like a 2 or 3 year contract at like 20-ish million.
At 34 years old?
He's still really good. I think he can definitely get a 2 year contract for $40 million.
What if they traded him to the Lakers? Can we make that package work for anything?
The Lakers don't want to tie up their cap, though, because they're looking to trade for Anthony Davis, right? So it wouldn't make any sense for them.
That's true.
You know, a team that I'd be looking at with Marc Gasol is Sacramento. Because Sacramento doesn't have a draft pick this year. They're clearly trying to win. And Willie Cauley-Stein is one of the worst defensive centers in the NBA, despite his offensive production. But you put Gasol on that team with those guards, that's a really good offensive team already. And then, you know, you add in Marc Gasol, always going to be able to help their half-court offense. And obviously, defensively, they're not very good, but he's one of the better defensive centers in the NBA still. So I think that's a move they should be looking at, too. And, you know, Memphis would be able to get a player like Cauley-Stein back, maybe even get one of their younger guys well off the bench, and maybe a draft pick. I think that could work.
Yeah, but then you lose out on, like, fast run and gun offense with Gasol, right? Like, he can't run like Willie Cauley-Stein. That's one of his major advantages.
No, but he can throw the outlet passes.
That's true. That is true. He is a really good rebounder too.
I think with, you know, him and Fox together on the pick and roll, that's deadly. I think he'd be a perfect fit there.
You think he would be a perfect fit, like, on like almost every team, though.
Well, I want Toronto to get him, too.
see what I mean? You want him on Toronto. You want him on Detroit. You want him on Dallas. Sacramento. The only team you don't want him on is LA, is what I've heard.
Or Boston.
What about Miami? Let's throw him there with Hassan Whiteside.
Nah, I don't and think anybody wants Hassan Whiteside. That trade would not make any sense. Like, Miami's stuck with their team.
Yeah, I know. They're boned. I'm just trying to throw out random teams that you can think of.
The team that Conley would help build, you know, take to another level, I think, is Milwaukee, though. Because even though Bledsoe's played really well this year, I think Conley is a better player than Bledsoe. And he's just better at, you know, organizing the half-court offense and his leadership, obviously. And defensively, he's better than Bledsoe, too. So I think if they were to make that type of deal, I think Milwaukee would be even more dangerous than a team that could beat, you know, Toronto and Boston, which I don't think they can right now.
Yeah, but I don't think you change something that's working and giving you the best record in the NBA.
If it gives you a better chance of winning the playoffs, you do.
No, I think for a team like Milwaukee that's happy to be in that position and they're doing really well, and there's no reason not to believe that they're going to be an Eastern Conference finalist.
Because Boston and Toronto are better.
Well, they aren't playing better. Boston has been, obviously we talked, or you guys talked about it last week, they've been kind of underperforming. The Raptors, obviously, are having a great season. I still think they have weaknesses that they need to address, whether it's style of play or personnel. But
yes. I knew we would get to Raj hating on the Raptors sooner or later.
I'm not hating. I'm just pointing out some things that, as a fan, you should, like, at least be honest with yourself and say, hey, you know what? Like, there's some weaknesses on this team. We can paper over them. We can beat teams like Atlanta or the Pistons. But at the end of the day, when you play teams seven times, they're going to look at these weaknesses and exploit them. And if you think that the Raps rebounding is good enough in the playoffs and their front court presence, whether it's just like in terms of being able to defend, is strong, then sure, go into the playoffs. But I think there is a big weakness for the Raps and rebounding. And at the end of the day, teams can shoot a lower percentage, but if they're getting at the end of the game 10 more opportunities, that might be the difference between winning and losing a series.
No, I disagree. Once Toronto just plays their top eight guys and they play guys like Danny Green 38 minutes a game instead of 30 and they don't have to play DeLon Wright at all, I think that they'll be fine. Look, Toronto has the least amount of weaknesses in the East right now. I think Boston, you know, their biggest weakness is just figuring out their roles, because who's going to play these minutes in the playoffs is going to be a big question for them. And then Milwaukee, I think that, you know, their offensive style is nice in the regular season, but when it comes to the postseason and teams sort of flush out the three-point line and Brook Lopez is not hitting four threes a game and they play off Giannis, I think they're going to have a harder time scoring in the playoffs.
Yeah, I think the finalists in the East will definitely be Boston and Toronto. I don't see Milwaukee getting there. But Boston, you guys are hitting on Boston a lot for a team who's won five straight.
I'm not. I think Boston's Toronto's biggest competition this year.
Easily.
And I think right now Boston might be better than Toronto, and you know, playoff-wise anyway, just because they have you know, Kyrie and a really good defense and guys that they can't really guard Kawhi, but they can at least make him work. I mean, Marcus Smart did a pretty good job in the fourth quarter last time they played, but I don't know. I think once JV gets back and Toronto gets their top eight guys, you know, rolling, hopefully in February, I think that, you know, Toronto's going to go on a big streak here and hopefully regain the top seed.
We'll see. That's why we love NBA basketball. But I think we're not giving the Bucks enough credit. And at the end of the day, I agree that Toronto and the Celtics are the team that are most likely to make the final or make the Eastern Conference Finals. But I still think the Bucks have a better shot than we're giving them credit for.
I think if you trade for Mike Conley and, you know, replace Bledsoe's production, the lack of production from the playoffs with Mike Conley, who's always been a great playoff performer, I think then you have a real contention.
Not going to happen, though.
Wow. Okay. So
we'll avoid your nightmare, Josh.
Right,
that'd be a dream for Milwaukee. Conley and Giannis together. Woo.
He said your nightmare. Toronto's nightmare.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if they traded for Conley, I shit my pants, so, you know.
Nobody wants to poop their pants, man. Sounds awful.
Speaking of pooping their pants, why don't we talk about the worst value contracts in the Ooh. NBA?
All right, so we're going to do a little something different here, guys. We're going to do our own awards. Obviously, everyone knows like the MVP talks, you have Giannis and Harden. Defensive player of the year, you got Miles Turner, like we already talked about. And like obviously other guys like Rudy Gobert. But we're going to make our own awards. So change it up a little bit here. Josh, you already alluded to it. The worst value contract in the NBA is where we're going to start. Who do you have?
So we're just talking about the ones that were signed in the offseason, correct?
I was just going with like literally just the worst value this year. It doesn't have to be signed this year.
Okay, I just went with guys from the offseason. But I think even going from guys with the offseason, even though I love him very much, Chris Paul obviously has one of the worst contracts in the NBA right now. Yes. I think John Wall has the worst contract in the NBA.
Not yet.
Just because it's so much more money. Yeah, not yet. But it's untradeable. But, you know, Chris Paul is probably second behind him. But I was more so looking at like guys that got lower level contracts that just are not producing, but Chris Paul is probably the worst out of all the ones that were signed last offseason.
Oh, yes. I am so happy you said it. My God. I have the dumbest grin on my face right now.
I still maintain, though, they had to do it just based on their situation, having no cap space. It's either you have Chris Paul on your team or you don't. You have nowhere to spend the money anyway. So
yeah, they tied themselves up.
They had to do it. They were handcuffed.
They tied themselves up last year when they traded for him. Same way that Philly did this year with Butler. And you know what? Butler's still going to produce more than Chris Paul did this year.
No, but you see why they did it, too, because I think this year is taking years off of Harden's career, too. With Harden having to do literally everything, I think that this is going to hurt him going forward. He's eventually going to get hurt, or he's just going to tire out, and they're not going to make the playoffs. So it's one of the two.
I think they could have tried to trade for a younger point guard. Maybe not someone who's in his mid to late 30s, or his contract's in the mid to late 30s.
Trade what?
Instead of getting Chris Paul?
No, but they couldn't trade Chris Paul.
No, I meant during the Chris Paul trade.
Like, they could have won for a player like Connolly.
Yeah. Instead of Chris Paul, like, last year.
Yeah, that's revision. That's Monday morning quarterback type stuff. Chris Paul played really well last year, and he was the best player for them in the playoffs, so.
He was, and everyone was just waiting for him to get hurt. Right? Like, I don't think anyone was fooled thinking that Chris Paul would stay healthy for a whole year.
I don't think you can blame a team for going for it, which is why, going back to the Conley thing, I think that's the reason why Milwaukee should just go for it and trade for a better point guard.
And yet you still hate on Philly for taking on Butler, for just going for it.
I hate on them for taking on Butler because I don't like the fit. And I think that he's a really injury-prone player, and they had a chance to keep their cap space and get somebody that fit better with their team.
I don't know, man. Sounds like Chris Paul is also a very injury-prone player.
I feel like Philly just sort of, they rushed the process instead of just keeping Embiid and Simmons and trying to get guys that fit around them and keep their, cap flexible versus Houston, who was already, in cap hell, and they decided to go for getting one more player. I think it's a different situation.
Marginally different. But let's move on. Raj, who do you have for your worst value contract?
Well, this is easy. Going back to my grind my gear segment, I think Chandler Parsons is by far on the worst contract in the NBA, considering he never plays. He signed, a four-year, $94 million contract in 2016. And based on his points and the value of his contract, he's making, what did I say last time, around $500,000 per point he's produced for Memphis, which is honestly the worst value you can imagine. But actually, taking this seriously, I think a player that actually plays and is on a terrible contract, this one's, I know John mentioned it, it's between Andrew Wiggins and John Wall, I think, just because you're investing so much money for players, in John Wall's case, who he can't really seem to be healthy. And he is all-star caliber, so I'll give him kind of the benefit of the doubt. So I would have to say that it goes to Andrew Wiggins, because they invested almost $150 million to him over the next 5 years. So it's roughly $30 million per year. And like that contract is pretty much untradeable unless Wiggins actually decides to show up.
Good take. I like that. It's all very true. Are we completely selling all Wiggins stock at this point?
If he actually played for Team Canada, I would still be okay with him. But the fact that he sits out every offseason, and then he comes back and he doesn't improve any part of his game, and he hasn't added anything to his game. Like, he still dribbles up to his, elbow. Like, How can you still have a high dribble like 5 years into the
league? He still looks like come on, man.
Yeah, and he has so much talent too. I mean, like when he plays Oklahoma or Cleveland when LeBron was there, like he was going really hard and he was averaging like 35 points a game against those teams for whatever reason. I mean, Cleveland obviously drafted him, trade him, but OKC just has something against him. I don't know. He just always lights up Paul George. Man, it's one of those things.
What a shame.
But if he played like that every day, I mean, he'd be a great contract, obviously, but he doesn't, and he's just, I don't know, he's hard to watch.
Yeah. For mine, I took a little bit of a different approach because obviously we've already talked about guys like Wall, Wiggins, Parsons, which is hilarious to me. But I want to look at teams who have really shitty payrolls, such as the Miami Heat, tied up $25 million with Hassan Whiteside this year, next year 27. Tyler Johnson is getting like almost $20 million a year. James Johnson is at 14 to 16 over the next 3 years. They have a bunch of mediocre guys who are getting paid at average or well above average salaries for the NBA.
They have Dion Waiters too, who got 4 years, $50 million.
Yeah, and who's played, what, like 3 games this year?
They have like 5 shooting guards on their team.
Like the worst planned team.
Speaking of shooting guards, I just want to add Avery Bradley, even though he's only on a 2-year contract with a team option. He got $13 million in this year, and he's averaging 8 points per game. He's got one of the worst defensive ratings in the NBA, and he's shooting 38% from the field and 32% from three. He's been one of the worst starts in the NBA this year. And I liked Avery Bradley on Boston, I mean, but ever since he's left there, he's had injury problems, and now he just looks totally washed.
Yeah, talking about washed players, an honorable mention has to go to Nicholas Batum.
Yes.
Oh my God.
I literally just pulled up his page. I was going to read out his numbers too.
Like, I think dude with him, though, I think he's just not trying. I don't think it's a matter of like him being bad. I think it's just him not trying it or caring anymore.
Man, his body looks like it retired last offseason, and he's just there merely as presence.
Yo, spending too much time on Boris Diaw's boat.
Guess how much Nicholas Batum is making this year.
24.
Next year, 25 and a half. With a player option, the next year after that, at $27 million.
Yeah, that's up there for worst con.
Woo!
Tracks in the NBA, right?
Also up there, because we're just shitting on Charlotte right now, Bismack Biyombo. They traded for him this offseason. Do you remember what he's making after his one good series in the playoffs?
4 years, $88 million?
Yeah.
Yeah, something like that. He's at 17 a year. Years, 70 was the original contract.
Well,
how insane is that? Marvin Williams, $14 million. Cody Zeller, 13.5, 14.4, 15.4. Way down on the list, Kemba Walker at 12. My God.
Man, I think Charlotte's trying to battle Miami not only for a playoff spot, but for a spot of the worst like managed teams in the NBA.
Man. However, we can also look at Kemba Walker's contract as being like the best value of in the league right now. I mean, he's making $12 million a year for this year at least. He's going to be leading the team into the All-Star break, obviously an All-Star this year. And he's the only All-Star in Charlotte who's hosting. So at least they have that going for them.
I think another value contract that goes really under the radar is Brook Lopez. He got 1 year, $4 million, and he's totally transformed their team into what they are now. I mean, they were a really bad rebounding team, and even though he's not a good rebounder, he knows how to box out. Now they've become one of the better rebounding teams, and they've built their defense around him and Giannis. Just with his presence at the rim, he's been a really good shot blocker this year. He just knows how to play, too, and he's played around 25, 30 minutes a game, and those are quality minutes. And you talk about a team that can need a guy like this in the Lakers. They let him go for nothing, and he's still a really, really quality player.
I would say, I know this is probably not a popular pick, but I would say in terms of just value, Boogie is an all-star, and paying him, what, $5.3 million for the 1 year that he's going to be on Golden State was a genius move. I know that he took less money to play in Golden State, but when he came back, like I think we're going to talk about it once he has a few more games under his belt, but he's still an all-star caliber center, and his skill set is great, and I think his skill set will probably improve playing with Golden State, especially off the ball, and he's always had good hands, good passer, great three-point shooter for a big man. So I think he's on a great value contract. And then, obviously, I think talking about a player that's actually turned it around this year, Derrick Rose. His career was pretty much a wash, and I think he was on a minimum contract. He's putting up numbers that probably could put him in contention for best sixth man of the year.
Here's a question. Can you give a former MVP, most improved player, 10 years into his career? I mean, because last year he looked like he wasn't even an NBA player last year, really. And now this year he looks like he's been one of the most efficient guards in the NBA this year.
Yeah, he's shooting 42% from the three. How insane is that? For Derrick Rose, a guy who was never good at shooting threes until this year.
He's shooting high 40s overall, too.
Yeah, 48. 19 points a game. These are borderline all-star numbers, let alone, six-man numbers. You know what I mean?
I also want to mention one other guy whose contract might have been on the borderline and that they probably should have spent the money elsewhere is Yusuf Nurkic. I thought for sure that four-year, $48 million deal was going to be, just Portland becoming a treadmill team. And they sort of still are, but he's really improved this year. His defense was already good last year, but his offense has taken it, to another level. He's been their consistent third option, sometimes second option, because McCollum has been that great this year. And he's been consistent the last 2 months of the season. He started off the season where he was not playing as much, but the last 2 months of the year, he's been one of the better centers in the NBA.
Let's move on. Like that, Jake. Best bench unit in the league. Who do you guys have? I'm going to go with the homer pick of the Nuggets because all their wing guys are just interchangeable with each other. And then you have Monty Morris running the point, Mason Plumlee at the big, and then just a bunch of shooters who can all play long wing defense.
I mean, if you're just talking about production, the Clippers bench has been the best so far this year just because they have Lou Williams and Montrezl Harrell, obviously. But I think a team like Brooklyn's gone under the radar because they've had a lot of injuries this year and guys have stepped up into roles. Like Rodion Skurux didn't play the first two months of the season, and now he's a starter for them. Jared Dudley was starting for them for a little while with Rondae Hollis-Jefferson out. Shabazz Napier's playing minutes as a third guard. They just have a lot of guys that they've developed, and shouts to their coaching staff for being able to get these guys' games to another level, especially Russell and Dinwiddie's been great this year, obviously. All their guys they've taken another step into development, and that's why they're the sixth seed, and they might move up to the fifth if Indiana does continue to struggle.
Yeah, I'm going to go with the team that's probably has one of the best bench units but has been underperforming, so that's Boston. I think that's what gives Josh nightmares at night, is when Boston decides and hopefully gets it together, they're going to have probably the best.
What do you mean, hopefully?
Hopefully for in terms of an NBA fan point of view. I kind of want my point proven that the Raps are going to get killed on the glass in the playoffs, and you're going to come crying to me being like, man, we should have got another big man. We're getting killed on the glass. Indiana just killed us.
Nah. Once Davey is back, everything's going to be fine. And plus, Boston's not a team that is great offensive rebounding anyway, and Milwaukee doesn't scare me at all, so I'm not worried about the rebounding.
But back to the original question, I think Boston has a lot of depth. I think the problem with them now is they don't know who's a starter and who's a player that's coming off the bench. They're kind of mixing roles, and I think that's up to Brad Stevens to really settle it down. But I think from a talent point of view, they probably have one of the best benches in the NBA.
At the same time, though, your bench has to produce in order to be one of the best benches, and theirs has not produced on a consistent basis. Moving on to another great bench unit, I think you have to talk about San Antonio, too. They've had the top three-point shooting bench in the NBA by far. They don't take a lot of threes, but they sure as hell make them. I mean, Bellinelli, Bertans, Patty Mills, they've just been absolutely fantastic off the bench. And DeRozan's actually struggled the last, 2 to 4 weeks overall, and those guys have been carrying the team, and they've had a pretty good record, obviously, the last month and a half, but the reason why they've been playing so well is because their three-point shooting has been so consistently good.
Yeah. Also, shouts to the Houston bench for just knowing their role and giving James Harden the ball.
I don't know if you can call them a bench unit when they have the MVP running with them, but players need to know their role, and
clearly they do it well. But clearly a joke, but I'm glad you kind of took it seriously. Let's save the rest of this for next week. Let's go to Stats Corner, Josh.
All right, so on the topic of bench units, we've already gone over the best benches, so let's bring up the least productive bench units in the NBA. So out of the bottom five, let's see how many you can name.
Philly.
Philly is not in the bottom five.
What?
Houston.
Houston is the worst at 26.5 points per game. That's 2.5 points worse than the second worst team, which is incredible.
Oh my god, that's insane. Let's say, like, Phoenix?
No, Phoenix is not on the bottom five.
Wow, I'm impressed.
Did we talk about them a lot today? Memphis?
Memphis is not there as well. So think about a superstar who we always say doesn't have enough help and might be on the trade market soon. Or is already.
Kemba?
Nope.
Really? Damn. Who else is on the trade market?
Who's the biggest name out there that everyone always talks about?
Oh, Anthony Davis.
Yes, New Orleans is second worst at 29 points per game.
But they have Jaleel.
He's starting now, so that doesn't count.
That's true. Who do they actually have off the bench?
Well, they had Randall in the beginning of the season, and he was great off the bench.
Is he starting for them now?
Yeah, Mirotić has been injured, so he's been coming off the bench recently. Then he got hurt yesterday again, so.
Nah, it's a shame. So their bench is just down to, like, Darius Miller and Solomon Hill?
Yeah. Oh.
God. Give me...
Chicago.
Yes, they are the fourth worst bench in the NBA.
Nice. Yeah, I thought their bench would be somewhat decent because they get blown out so often that they put up stats like that. But then I was like, you know what? They're probably pretty bad because they probably just want to develop Markkanen. So,
Cleveland.
Cleveland is not there. I guess Jordan Clarkson's been able to prop them up just enough.
True. And Alec Burks.
Yes.
Big trade, Alec Burks.
I'm still shocked about Philly not being there.
Oh, somebody got a text message.
Woj.
let's say...
Well, this team has two superstar players, but they're, you know, all their money's tied up in the starting lineup, essentially. Oh, and for years, they haven't really been able... Nope. Okay, for years, they haven't really been able... Yes.
City?
OKC is third worst.
Oof.
I thought they would be better with Schroeder off the bench, though.
They don't really have anybody else. I mean, New Orleans Noel has played well this year, but he's not really a scorer, right? And then besides that, they don't have a lot. They have Patrick Patterson.
Man.
Enough said.
Yeah.
We're missing one, Josh?
How about Indy?
No, Indy's not there.
Oh, they have Sabonis.
That's a Sabonis, I suppose. And plus, Corey Joseph's been okay this year. The team that you're missing, we've talked about during the podcast, and we're talking about treadmill teams and teams that don't have enough talent, and this is definitely one of them.
Detroit?
Nope, but you're close.
Orlando.
That is correct.
What? Really?
Damn.
But Terrence Ross has been so good this year.
Yeah, but name their backup point guard.
Terrence Ross. Yeah, that's a shame. They could really use Mike Conley now. You're right.
Yo, it's going to happen.
My God. Or Dennis Smith Jr. Literally anyone at this point.
They need a body.
Yeah.
And then one last thing, just going back to another thing we just talked about, is rebounds. So in terms of opponents' offensive rebounds per game, so teams that give up the most offensive rebounds in the NBA, can you name the teams that do?
Boston.
Boston is not in the bottom five, no.
Is that a small
one team off the bat you should get because we've talked about them and about their rebounding woes?
Toronto?
Yes.
Ooh. I like this take, Josh.
Where do they stand in this?
They're 26th in the NBA.
Oh, my God. That's brutal.
So they're giving up the most. They're one of the teams that gives up the most offensive rebounds.
Correct.
Okay.
Well, with Serge Ibaka and Pascal as your only rebounders on the team, kind of makes sense.
When JV comes back, it's all solved. Don't worry.
I don't know, man. I don't trust it that much. I still think they needed someone else.
Preach.
And OG's been out for a while, too, and he's been a pretty good rebounder. So, and no, like, Kawhi's been out, too. Can't forget that.
Kawhi's sitting four straight.
For like 10 games. He averages like 9 rebounds a game, so there you go.
Man, Kawhi sitting 4 straight games is so funny. I think it's hilarious.
Well, they got Houston coming up, so that's going to be a very interesting game. I hope we just absolutely clobber them.
You better hope that he shuts down Harden to like 30 points.
What a thing to say. Shuts down a guy.
Man, why don't they just double Harden on every play? Like, every play.
I think it's because NBA teams are too smart. They'll eventually figure it out. You can't do the same thing every time.
Like, what? Yeah, you can. I think what are they going to do? Just pass the ball to PJ Tucker and hope, like, he's going to make plays. He might get 30 points, but at least Harden doesn't scorch you for 60.
They still have NBA players, though. So if you leave them open, you know, 60 times a game, they're going to make a high percentage of them.
Yeah, we'll see. I think some teams should try it. But getting back to worst offensive or teams that give up the most offensive rebounds, I want to say a team like Atlanta.
Nope, Atlanta's not there.
Cleveland
is not there.
How about Phoenix?
Phoenix is also not there.
What? My God, we're not good at this at all.
The Lakers.
Yep, Lakers are 27th.
Nice.
What happens when you start JaVale McGee for half a year?
Oh, they have Tyson Chandler, jerk. And Zubac. He's actually been pretty good. Give me Washington?
Yep. Washington is the worst in the NBA. So another team that plays really fast, we've talked about a bit the last few weeks, and we've talked about their starting center so far this podcast as well.
The Queens?
Yes, they're second worst. Just going to show that, again, Willie Cauley-Stein has not had as good of a year as some people think.
The Sacramento Queens.
Don't say that. Grant Napier is going to be blowing up your phone after that.
I would love for Grant Napier to call me. I will gladly pick up his call. All right, so one more, right?
Yeah, we got one left.
East or West?
In the West. They are currently a playoff team, but they are struggling.
Struggling
team in the West. That's a playoff seed.
Their starting center plays maybe 15 minutes a game.
Yeah, oh, okay. Yeah. The Clippers.
That is correct.
Yeah. I told you guys at the beginning of the year that Gortat wouldn't be good. Told you, man. This guy, like, he's old. He can't run anymore. I guess in his heyday, he was a good rebounder. But now, like, he's barely there. There's a reason why Montrezl Harrell plays so much.
It's hard working two jobs, you know, Game of Thrones filming and playing the NBA. It's no easy feat.
Game of Thrones extra. He's flying back and forth from Iceland. Oh, man, that's great.
He's also a Jordan Brand rep, too, wearing that tattoo on his leg, right?
Yo, he doesn't have to do anything. He's just got to wear shorts.
It's true.
I don't even think he's rep by Jordan. It'd be hilarious if he was actually like an Adidas athlete.
It's like the no homer club for Gortat. He's always at the Jordan Brand door knocking on it, and Jordan's like, get the guy out of here. Security?
Is that all we got? Anyone else got anything? No? Okay. I'm going to take your silence as a no. I want to thank everyone for listening. Please remember to rate and subscribe. Find us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, all the podcast networks. Obviously hit us up on Instagram and Twitter at Stretch4Pod. And until next time, peace. Thank you.